Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, the show that offers you tips and strategies to help speakers build the business of their dreams. Now, here's your host, 30-year industry veteran and business coach, Jane Atkinson.
Well, welcome everyone to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. As many of you know, for going on a couple of years now, I have been studying mindset, and I've come to believe that mindset is everything when it comes to performance and success in your business. Now, we're so lucky today because we have the author of Shift Your Mind, Brian Levinson, here with us. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
I'm so excited. Your book is out now. I want to give our listeners some interesting insights into the power mindset. But first, let's just give us a little bit of your background and how you came to land on this topic and this area of expertise.
I was a complete lost puppy out of college. I studied sociology, African-American studies, and political science, which were all things that I was interested in college. But when I graduated, they said, go find a job. And I said, well, here's my degree. And people basically weren't all that interested in hiring me. And so I ended up working in sales, which I was pretty good at. Honestly, I liked. I know a lot of people have an aversion to sales. Mm-hmm. I didn't have that aversion. I enjoyed talking to people, connecting with people. I learned that sales was a lot about listening and learned that the hard way. But I felt like there was something else out there for me to really do and step into. So I was really fortunate to have lunch one day at the Cheesecake Factory where we probably ate too much food. But I was with a woman named Julie Ellion. And at the time, Julie was one of the top mental performance coaches really in the world. She keeps a pretty low profile, but publicly she's worked with Phil Mickelson, who's one of the top golfers in the last 20, 30 years. And she's worked with a lot of pro athletes and CEOs, a lot of different people. We had lunch and it was just this remarkable conversation. And for the first time, I think really in my life, I felt like, yeah, this is something that I think I would enjoy doing. I think I'd be good at. And Julie was saying the same thing. So I stayed in sales a little after that lunch meeting, but I stayed in touch with Julie. She mentored me. She allowed me to shadow her and help me figure out where to go to grad school. So I ended up getting my master's in sports psychology. I took the dive and the plunge in, moved out to California for that. It was an amazing experience. And when I finished that up, I was really, really lucky, privileged, fortunate, blessed, whatever word you want to use, because I had Julie. And so Julie helped me get started and helped me get clients right from the get-go. So I started working with all kinds of athletes. One of my first clients was an NBA player. I was in training camp with a professional basketball team within the first year or two. So I got access pretty quickly. It doesn't mean that I made, gobs of money and that my business was thriving, but I was set up pretty good. And so I started working with these athletes and these sports teams. And along my journey, I started to get calls from people outside of sports. Mm-hmm. They might've been a small business owner who played a Division I sport or in the sports industry, but not an actual athlete or a head coach of a sports team. And so I started coaching people that were not necessarily athletes as well. And I found executive coaching, which I didn't really know was a thing. Yeah. It just so happens that Georgetown University, which is right near where I live, and not too far away, has an amazing program for that. So I went back to school for executive coaching. So to make a long story short, my business today is a combination of executive coaching and mental performance coaching with also some speaking and consulting as well. And just really fortunate to find out something that I'm pretty good at. I love what I do and that they're both growing fields. So it's pretty special for me. And once again, I'm really grateful to Julie for guiding me on this path.
Wow, that is really quite, you have a very long list of academic achievements there. And talk about your business model. Okay, so we're obviously a home for professional speakers, and I know that speaking isn't necessarily the primary focus of your business, but talk about the different pots or revenue streams that you have coming into your business.
I love that you called them pots because I call them buckets. And buckets. So it's very similar.
I really just misspoke. I call them buckets too.
There you go. Pots, buckets. Right now we're in COVID time. So everything is kind of the same. Your buckets might serve as pots. Your pots might serve as buckets. I look at it as one-on-one coaching is something I love to do. So right. I want to work with 10 executives you know, almost in a boutique way. So I have an accelerator program where I coach these 10 executives and then I bring them together for monthly Zoom calls, an annual retreat normally. And so that's really the one-on-one coaching bucket for executives. Then I have one-on-one coaching for athletes, which I really try to limit to 5 to 10 athletes, very small premium. It's mainly professional athletes, some college athletes, occasionally some high school athletes. And then I have a few coaches that I also refer business to. So that's on the coaching side. Then you have team work. So I'll go to an athletic department or a professional sports team, or I'll go to a company and say, hey, let me work with your whole executive team. And so that'll involve workshops and coaching, some combination of the two. So that's another bucket. And then you have speaking almost on its own, where I could come in and do a keynote or an all-day retreat. Young President's Organization hired me to be a facilitator. The Federal Reserve hired me to do a workshop for them, stuff like that. So I try to do not too many of those, but I enjoy being in front of people. I don't mind performing. The book, which we'll get to, talks about performing. So that's another bucket for me as far as revenue. And then there's other streams and other stuff. I'm just an entrepreneurial person. So I have an assessment that I created. I have a podcast. I have a book. So I'm somebody who is a little bit all over the place, but I'm pretty intentional with what I tap into. And then I like to experiment, try new things, and see where it goes.
Sure. And tell everybody the name of your podcast.
The podcast is called Intentional Performers. And
perfect name based on what you said.
And it wasn't that originally. So originally it was called Shift Your Mind. And the idea, it was called Beyond the Surface. Shift Your Mind is the name of the book, and it's pretty top of mind right now, but it was called Beyond the Surface. And the idea originally was to go beyond the surface with a lot of elite performers and go deep and really understand who they are, how they came to be who they are. And as I'm interviewing these people, we were about 30 episodes in, maybe 40 episodes in, I realized that there was a pattern that emerged that these people were very intentional with how they were setting up their mind, how they were setting up systems and processes in their life. And there was just an intention that I noticed. And so today we call the podcast Intentional Performers. And I really look to chat with people that are thoughtful and intentional about how they're living, how they're working, and how they're showing up for other people.
I love that. And one little side note, that if you're going to have a podcast, name it something that people can be, oh, okay, I get that. I understand what it is that you're trying for. The original name may not have led the horse to the water quite as nicely as Intentional Performance does. And I think that that's really important, don't you?
That's helpful. And I wish I could tell you I was more intentional with it. I'm somebody, it's like I have an idea. I think it makes sense. And I just kind of run with it. And I think a lot of times many of us are afraid of making a perfect name or trying to make sure that it's exactly right rather than just diving in and get started. So for me, I got into it. My audio equipment sucked. I interviewed some cool people, but I probably wasn't as organized as I should have been. And I learned a lot from that experience. And the name now is exactly what I think it should be. And it really does represent who I'm chatting with. So
that's awesome. We take clear over clever any day.
I love that.
A lot of people really try for clever. And I get that, you know, we want something that is catchy, but if I don't understand what it's about, how can I lean into it, right? And I want to talk about a little feather in your cap before we dive into the mindset content. You had Dan Pink on your show, which is super cool. That's a pretty big get.
You know, with Dan, it's crazy. So I definitely was persistent and gritty and stayed with him. He's in Washington, D.C. I'm in Washington, D.C. Obviously, I mean, as far as authors go, for me, he's pretty top of the pyramid as far as books that I consume. But Dan, I sat in on, I don't know if you're familiar with Ryan Holiday, who's written a bunch of best-selling books. So I sat in on a talk with Ryan Holiday, and Dan happened to be there. And I tried to connect with Dan multiple times, and then I noticed that he was going to be there in the audience. And so I said, hey, I saw you're going to be in the audience. Let's connect. We didn't connect, but then that sort of opened up the door to have him on the podcast. And then he's really gracious with his time. He endorsed my book, which was really, really nice of him. And he enjoyed the book too, which helps. But one thing about Dan that I just want to point out is during that talk with Ryan Holiday, I'd say there were a couple hundred people in the room, maybe 150. And I'm looking around the room just to notice how people are taking Ryan in. And I look over and I see Dan just scribbling notes.
Yeah.
super curious human being and somebody who is obviously accomplished, but I love how he still approaches things as a novice and genuinely curious and loves learning and growing. And I think that's what allows him to have great books, because he's always learning, growing, gathering information. And then he takes what he's learned and puts it into a book format. And it's really powerful.
Have you ever noticed that people are, and myself included, more excited when they're learning? It, like, more passionate about whatever it is or whatever. Like, if I'm in not learning mode, I'm kind of one way. But if I'm in learning mode, I'm kind of on fire. And it's really hard to, I can be more unstoppable that way.
And I'm obsessed with this idea of curiosity and conviction. And I grew up in a household where conviction was a big deal. So I've got two brothers. My parents are both pretty convicted in their values and their beliefs and how they see the world. And so our dinner table was somewhat argumentative. And it wasn't the type of dinner table where, son, shut up, you're the son. It was open to dialogue and conversation. And it got me in trouble sometimes with teachers and people of authority, my elders. But I was brought up to have conviction and to have passion. But as I continue to get older, and I'm not that old, I have really tried to tame my conviction, because I'd rather be a learn-it-all than a know-it-all. And for me, when I am curious, that's when I'm growing, learning, developing. And so I love toggling between curiosity and conviction. And obviously, you're having me on this podcast right now, so I feel like I have to be convicted in some of what I'm talking about. But I'm sure there's going to be something that we have a conversation about today that sparks my curiosity. And to be transparent, even before we fired up the mics, you gave me some information that was really, really helpful. And it just came from me asking you a little bit more about yourself and being curious. And then I learned something that I literally will be able to apply to my career. And so curiosity first, conviction second, for me, has become something that I really try to focus on. And it actually goes well with my book in a way, because we talk about these polarities and these shifts. And to me, it's curiosity and preparation is massive so that we can have conviction in our performance.
I love that. And I think we found our quote of this show, Monica. I'd rather be a learn-it-all than a know-it-all. That's a good one. I don't think I've ever heard that before, Brian.
I stole it from somewhere, Jane.
Okay, well, we'll give credit to somebody else, but we don't know. That's really good. Okay, so let's dive into the mindset conversation. You have a video that is really, really well done that we're going to post on the show notes page. If you want to get the show notes, by the way, go over to Speaker Launch or click on the podcast. You'll see the show there. So the video really helps delineate the distinction between preparation and performance. Spell that out for us.
So I'm working with all these athletes and we're having conversations like, how do you build confidence? And we're dialoguing it. And what we started to realize, and really was sparked by an NFL football coach who said, you have to be humble enough to prepare and confident enough to perform. And so I started asking my clients, hey, how are you humble in preparation and confident in performance? And we would outline it. And then they would say, but also, Brian, I need to be analytical in my preparation and trust my instincts in performance. Or I need to approach preparation as if it's work and performance as if it's play. And so all of these shifts started to emerge. And I literally would just do an exercise where I'd put on a piece of paper, I draw a line down the middle of the piece of paper and put preparation on one side, performance on the other. And these shifts started to occur. And so it started to become an exercise that I would do with my clients. And it became crystal clear. You talked about clarity earlier. I had clarity around this framework that how we set our mind in preparation should actually be different than how we set our mind in performance. So the book focuses on 9 of these shifts. But honestly, there's like 30 or 40 of these that have been sussed out with a lot of my clients. And I'm sure there's even more out there as people in different industries think about how they set their mind in preparation, how they set their mind in performance.
So good. And I could see we can actually think about performance in 2 ways. Performance being, how are you performing in your business? How are you performing day to day? But also stage performance. how do you prepare versus how do you perform? That's really interesting. You say humble and confident. And what do you do in terms of stage performance to prepare versus to perform? I know I'm totally throwing you under the bus here because you probably never thought about this before.
I'll get to myself eventually, but I think where I'll start is just with some distinctions, because I think you hit on something. Like, what do you mean by performance? What do you mean by preparation? So yeah. I want to make sure we're speaking the same language here. Okay. So for me, preparation is the action or process of making ourselves ready and competent. It's learning, it's growing, it's developing, it's making ourselves ready. Performance is about execution. So it's the execution of actions that will be evaluated in some way. There is judgment. If you're a speaker, you're probably going to get scored on how well you did. And that score matters if the company wants to bring you back or the conference wants to bring you back. So there is something on the line here. Let's be real about this. There is an outcome, a desired outcome. And then there's another piece to this, which is actually practice. And sports actually does a good job of this. And this will get to maybe where I think about it for myself as a speaker at times. Practice is the action of working at something repeatedly as to become proficient. So it's about this preparation and this performance mind. So the preparation can be about growing, learning, developing, getting feedback, getting coached. The performance is about practicing that performance mind. So practicing executing. I think of Chris Rock, who I talk about in the book. He experiments before he goes on stage and does a comedy show. So he goes to this little theater in New Jersey and tries things like 100 times and tries new jokes and new material so that when he's on an HBO special, he's ready to go. But when he's on that stage in New Jersey, there's a time where he's experimenting. And then there's a time where he knows a joke is good and he's actually trying to master the delivery, the execution. So a great practice will involve both the preparation mind and the performance mind. And the guy that I think about when I think of public speaking is Tony Robbins. Mm-hmm. And his documentary did a really good job of giving you details into how he thinks about preparing and performing. Before he gets on stage, he's jumping up and down. He's getting himself ready to go. But he's also got a team of people that he's listening to and thinking about, how can I serve my audience? So I actually use the term arrogant instead of confidence when it comes to the performance mind. And arrogance for me is this unshakable belief that you're the right person for the job. And I argue that you can actually be confident when you are humble. So it actually takes true confidence for Tony Robbins to look at his team and say, hey, what could I have done better there? Where can I grow? Where can I learn? Where can I develop? Just last night, I did a workshop for a soccer team, and I had one of my mentees on the call, and everybody got off the Zoom and he stayed on. And I said to him, I said, Harris, anything you think I could do better? And he gave me two really good tips as far as managing a virtual call. And that was massive for me. But I didn't need Harris to give me that feedback while I was executing. It wasn't going to be helpful. Right. So for me, how I do this is I really try to get feedback. I try to quantify and qualify the feedback as much as possible. And when I'm actually executing, I know that for me, I need to be present. I need to be instinctual. I need to trust my process. I need to be selfless. There are things that I need to do when I'm performing to be at my best that are different than how I need to prepare. And essentially, that's what the book is about, shifting between your preparation and your performance mind.
I love that. Now, let's circle back for a second, because it's a hot word for us here in this industry, is arrogance. So how do you go onto the stage using this level of confidence, I guess? I'd probably prefer to name it confidence, and not roll into arrogance, which is, I'm somehow better than you. And we actually, up here in Canada, so I live in London, Ontario, Canada, and we have had speakers come up north to our conventions and come off as arrogant American. That's probably something that, you know, you want to know about. And so if you're going to another country, which of course we're in COVID, so I don't know that anybody's going to any countries right now, but for the future, how do we make sure that we don't cross into the arrogance that what we deem as annoying?
I think the big thing here is to leverage both mindsets. So if I'm arrogant all the time, I'm going to come off as a jackass, a jerk. Nobody wants to be around someone arrogant all the time.
Right.
What I would argue is if you do the humble preparation, you earn the right to believe that you're the right person for that job. And you can have an unshakable belief that you're the right person for the job. And I'm not suggesting that you do these in a vacuum. So I can be selfless while still having this unshakable belief that I can service my people. I think like a Martin Luther King or a Gandhi or anybody that changed the world had to have this exaggerated sense of self and that they could do amazing things that society or the world might say that they can't do. You're in Canada. I think of a guy named Steve Nash who played in the NBA from Canada. And before Steve Nash, if you're from Canada, there's only one sport that you should be playing in the United States, and it's not basketball. It was hockey, right? And yet Steve Nash, who's a 6'3", you know, guy who I think's family's from South Africa originally, and they came to Canada. He went to play at Santa Clara, which is a small Division I school because they're the only ones that want him in California. Yeah. Yet when he got into the NBA, he had to have this exaggerated sense of self. And I've talked to coaches that worked with Steve Nash. And the reason he had an exaggerated sense of self was because he humbly prepared and he knew he put the work in. And by the way, when he's playing in a game, he was a point guard. His job was to make everybody around him better. He was selfless, but he still believed he's the right person for the job. So look, I understand why people get a bad vibe when they hear that word arrogant, but I will tell you, I've seen far too many people remain humble in performance and have that get in the way for them than I have people who are humble in preparation and tap into arrogance. And so for me, you earn the right to be arrogant through your humble preparation. And I argue the people that are arrogant and come off as arrogant, it's because they haven't actually done the humble preparation to know how they need to show up when the lights are on or when they're on stage or in the arena. And that to me is the distinction.
Thank you for clarifying that. Steve Nash was not a big guy either. The fact that he had to work extra hard for that. And I just want to say, go Raptors. Sorry about your year this year. We did win though. Okay. So let us move on to the power of when you talk about that in your book. Talk about what you mean by the power of when and.
And I can build off it from what we were just talking about. When matters. We don't talk about when to be arrogant. We just say, don't be arrogant. We don't talk about when to be selfish. We just say, don't be selfish. We don't talk about when fear is actually a good thing. We just say, don't be fearful and just be fearless. And I think it's really bad advice. For me, fear is helpful in preparation. It allows us to make sure that we're prepared. Going back to our conversation, I listened to one of your podcast episodes because I don't want to come on here and not know anything about your podcast. I want to have a little fear and anxiety that this won't go well. And by stepping into that fear, it then allows me to be fearless once we turn on the mics. Selfish and selfless. I'm a parent. I've got two small kids at home. There became a time when my wife looked at me and said, Brian, like you're ripping and running at work, you're home trying to be super dad. What are you doing for yourself? And I had a great client tell me this once. She said, take care of your marriage first and your kids second. I think leaders, you have to put your oxygen mask on first before you put others on. You have to fill your cup first and then give the overflows to your people. And speakers, if you have speakers on here that are listening, they're doing 50 gigs a year and are traveling and they're constantly going, like you need to take care of yourself, whether that's diet, exercise, sleep, personal relationships, connections, because if you're not, and I have a good friend who's an amazing keynote speaker and did 50 a year, made over $1 million a year. I mean, he's an amazing speaker. And I would have talks with him. He's like, Brian, I'm burnt out. And then he'd get on stage and he'd bomb it because he hasn't taken care of himself. So if you want to serve your audience, you better take care of yourself first. So when is all about understanding when certain things do serve us and when they don't. And that's why I try to make this distinction between preparation and performance. And then the power of and, which I think is so cool, and improv does an amazing job of talking about the power of and. For me, once again, humble in preparation and arrogant in performance. This isn't an or a versus. This is about, hey, if we use this here, then it serves as an and to our performance mind. So I just believe in both of those. You can probably hear my conviction. It's a pretty strong conviction for me.
We're at the dinner table, Ron.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. It comes out sometimes. My brothers, you know, if we talk about sports or politics or whatever it might be, you know, we still have that fight in us, and it's big for me to know when to lower that. That's the when, right? Like, when do I need to have that conviction, and when do I need to shift to more of a curious mind and think about, well, why is something the way it is? And I think it really matters when we show up in those different mindsets.
You could be really curious right now when it comes to politics. You live in Washington, and I can't even imagine the dinner table conversations that are going on all across. I mean, we're at the time of this recording, I think we're 29 days away from your election. When it comes to curiosity, how do you move into curious mode when it comes to somebody with completely opposite opinions as you? I mean, I don't see a lot of people on Twitter being curious about anybody else's opinions. They're just laying down their own. And oh my goodness, I mean, this past weekend, everything is blown up and there's even more divisiveness and more. I watched Twitter yesterday just go nuts. So talk to me a little bit about, you live right in the thick of things.
So first of all, I love Twitter. And too much of anything's a bad thing, and nothing of something is also a bad thing. So I believe, like, you know, Twitter serves a great purpose. And I think I've been so much more knowledgeable and well-educated and learned so much from being active on Twitter. So I'm grateful for it. And I use it too much, it's an echo chamber, and it can lead you down a path of not being curious and just wanting to be a troll and fight and argue. And it's not really a great place to have those types of dialogue. However, the dinner table is, sitting outside around a fire pit is, there's tons of other opportunities. Podcasting is a great opportunity to have really great long form dialogue. So I think there's different pieces to it. As it relates to the US and politics, I live next to Walter Reed Hospital, which is where Donald Trump is currently located because he has COVID. Yes. I'm a few miles from the White House and Capitol Hill, and I grew up in Washington, D.C. This is my home. And people in Washington, D.C., we laugh because we don't really talk much about politics. I mean, we live here.
Oh, you're kidding me. You're joking.
No, the people that are involved in politics love talking about politics. But if you're not on Capitol Hill, like, I live in the suburbs, we're like any other suburb. I actually think DC just brings a lot of highly educated people, which is interesting, but it's fascinating. Look, politics dominates everything America right now, but in normal times, which is saying something, it's actually not at top of mind. I will say this though, for me, I am so curious about why someone leans whatever way they lean. Yeah. And so asking why, I think, is really, really important as it relates to a dialogue. And so for people that are Trumpers, I would encourage them to ask why someone may not support some of Donald Trump's thoughts. For people that are never Trumpers, I'd encourage them to ask why. And if we go from it at a place of empathy and understanding, then we actually can have more conviction, because now I understand that you are pro-Trump because you're worried about the security of our nation and you want to secure our borders and you want to make sure that your kids are safe. And if you are pro, you know, healthcare, you are saying, hey, I want Obamacare because I want to make sure that if something bad happens to me or my family, that we'll be okay. And I think understanding where people are coming from then allows you to make your argument that much better. So for me, I'm pretty convicted in where I stand politically, but every 4 years, I try to listen to the debates with an open mind and step into that. I usually end up going in the direction that I was going to go in before, but I think we need to continue to lean on empathy unless there is imminent danger. And I think that's the piece. When someone threatens violence or threatens something that can hurt or harm someone, that's when the empathy needs to be thrown out the window. And I've asked people who are empathy experts that, and they say empathy is massive because you can actually understand where someone's coming from. If you talk to negotiation experts, they'll say your job when you're negotiating is to put yourself in their shoes, to probe, to ask questions so that you can make a proposal. I think it's all the same thing as we think about human interactions. Can we try to understand where someone's coming from? The racial situation in the United States is a perfect example. Lean into curiosity. And then from that curiosity, then you can decide where you stand on things. But if you just are convicted all the time, you never learn, you never grow, and you never stay open to possibilities.
see, I just wanted you to use your poli sci and your African American studies content that you took way back when in school. And then we would wrap it up with your sports psychology master's. So
I was hoping those things would not be as relevant.
You got to pull out all of your tools in your tool belt today, Brian. Well, I want to make sure that we talk about your book. So Shift Your Mind is coming out. I think it's tomorrow. So it'll be out by the time this broadcast is released. Yay. Congratulations. Big deal. Is this your first book?
First one. Took me four years to write this bad boy. And
super exciting. You know, if it wouldn't have been for, I don't know, like a numerologist or someone out in the woo-woo, you know, kind of psychic world said to me years and years ago, you're going to write several books. She told me that after I'd written my first one, I was like, no, I'm never writing another book. Well, now I'm on number five, Brian. So just know that the first one might feel really, really hard and that you're never going to do it again. But I would encourage you to be open to the fact that it might only be number one.
I can't believe people have the gall, audacity, boldness, or whatever when I tell them, yeah, my book's coming out, and that they say to me, well, when's the next one? I look at them and I say, what are you talking about?
It's like birthing a child. But see, then you forget. You forget about the delivery, and that's what happens, and you go on and have more kids, right?
Pain is temporary. Absolutely.
Yeah. You'll get over it. I'm telling you that right now. And you will think of another idea, and off you'll be to the next topic. Okay, so Shift Your Mind. We're going to send people out to Amazon to pick that up. Your podcast, again, is called
Intentional Performers.
Intentional Performers. I want to thank you for making us all think about our mindset and how we move that around, and it goes back to our performance. Well, last question for you. How important do you think mindset is to having everything and earning the lifestyle and the business that you want to have in your life?
So first of all, I think luck plays a role. I think talent plays a role. And I think that's just reality. Mm-hmm. And I think your environment plays a role. And when I think about fulfilling potential, that's where I call it set mind. So I'm a big fan of trying to change how people use words, in case you didn't tell. I'm a little bit of a contrarian. So I use the term mindset in the book, but I really think about it as set mind, because I think your mind is anything but set. And it's up to us to set our mind. And I think really talent, environment, luck, that sets the floor. But your mindset, or how you set your mind, that's what determines if you fulfill your potential or not. Mm-hmm. And it's really between you and you. There's nothing getting in the way from you thinking like a pro, whether you're a pro or not. So I always talk about, I play basketball on a Wednesday nights, and I can think like LeBron James. There's nothing stopping me to think like him. Obviously, I can't dunk. I'm not 6'8". I don't have his talent, his gifts, but I can think like a pro. And I think that's the beauty of the mind, is that it's kind of unlimited and it's constantly growing. The neuroscience around the brain is, they used to think that it stops at the age of 25, and that's really been debunked. We can grow, we can develop, we can learn. And so that's the world I play in. That's the world I live in. And I have great conviction in that idea that it really does either get in the way or unlock you in a certain way. So I'm really fortunate to find this space to play in. And I'm just big on empowering others to help them get from where they are to where they want to go. So I'm grateful for you giving me a megaphone here and being able to share some of the stuff I've learned. And hopefully people found it helpful. And the last thing I'll just plug is, I have a company called Strong Skills, and you can find us at strongskills.co. And Strong Skills, once again, was designed to debunk how we think about certain things. So in the corporate world, leadership, emotional intelligence, communication, stuff that I know your audience is interested in, those are called soft skills. And often they're bringing in a speaker because they want to work on the soft skills. And for me, coming from sports, the term soft, it was a negative word. It's a negative connotation. If you're soft, you're weak. Right. And me, these skills that your listeners probably present on is actually what makes them strong. It's actually what makes us strong. So when I think about mindset and how we set our mind, that's what's actually, those are the skills that make us strong. And that's what we really feel passionate about. And that's the group that we formed to go into organizations and change how they're thinking about developing their people by valuing these skills like they should be valued. So I think that might be a good place to sort of interject. Big part of my mission is to try to get these skills in as many heads and hands as possible.
Beautiful. Strongskills.co. We'll put the link to that in the show notes as well. Brian Levinson, thank you so much for your time today. Listeners, if you have enjoyed what Brian had to say, please let us know. Reach out. Let us know with a review. And hopefully we will be able to hear some more feedback about this particular show. And with that, we will say, see you soon, Wealthy Speakers. Bye for now, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. If you need help building the speaking business of your dreams, head over to WealthySpeakerSchool.com and take advantage of our 20-minute next step call. Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast.